Bennett, you want this?
Could you change your phrasing?
Bennett, you want this?
And cold open.
Is TikTok about to die or not? I hope not. Because if so, how will the kids know that Trump owned Biden this week on the new Israel-Palestine ceasefire deal? And Democrats decided that Kavanaugh-ing all confirmation hearings kind of their new brand now.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah, that's it.
It should be fun to see how these unfold. We'll get into that a little bit. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back to Human Reaction. I am one of your hosts, Joe Sheehan. I'm here with David Rand and Kyle Mack and Bennett on the buttons. And we're so glad to have you. Please like, subscribe, follow, leave us a review wherever you're watching or listening to this show. If you want to support the show and get access to our exclusive content, go to humanreactionpod.com and join our Discord. It's a great community. Tons of people in there. We have great conversations. You can do so at the link in the description. If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's intelpatriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at RevvedUpPromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
And coming from the Discord, I just pulled this meme from Cheryl, and I thought it was quite humorous. It's, by the power of white women, I am offended on your behalf.
No, it's by the power of white girl.
Or white girl. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. You got to be specific. It's solid.
And before we kind of get into some of the news about the TikTok stuff and everything, we also have Joe Biden.
But first,
he's left.
A moment of silence for the exit of Joe Biden.
Joe Biden had some wise words that he wanted to depart upon us with his exit, because this is his last week in office. So here was his farewell address.
Now, his farewell address, President Eisenhower spoke of the dangers of the military-industrial complex. He warned us then about, and I quote, the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power, end of quote.
Now, his end of quote.
End of quote.
Yeah.
Classic.
I do like the trying to pretend to be Eisenhower on the way out. Like,
it's
kind of fun.
Like, this doesn't even qualify as gaslighting. This is just stupid. What?
This is the guy that literally just months ago was putting out campaign pressers saying how great the aid packages to Ukraine and Israel are because it'll build our industrial base, a.k.a. the military-industrial complex. What are we doing?
It's just humorous, man. It really is.
It's really a shame just seeing him, like, you know, shroud himself in this.
I don't think that it's working. I mean, maybe on, like, some subset of the population that still has some respect for him, but I think most people are seeing right through this, particularly with the, like, 4 years of war that we've had under his leadership,
right.
If you can call it leadership.
Right.
There's one more that we wanted to pull as well. So here's one last final message from Biden. Probably the last time we talk about him. Probably
please,
not, maybe.
Please, God. Knows?
Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. Editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit. We must hold the social platforms accountable to protect our children, our families, and our very democracy from the abuse of power.
And how are we going to hold social media companies accountable? We're going to ban TikTok.
By banning them.
We're going to ban TikTok.
Yes.
Because just coming in this morning, the courts upheld the TikTok banning going into effect this Sunday.
Okay. So on what grounds did they support the ban?
Well, China, of course. That was the overt claim, right? So all
from the Supreme Court?
Yeah. No, just on that, the government has the power to ban companies they don't like.
It was a national security basis?
Yeah. Yeah.
If that
I
was
understand it,
it
right. Yeah.
And it was unanimous.
Really?
Yeah. Like we had, there were some dissenting opinions from Sotomayor and from Gorsuch.
Well, not dissent. But
they had their own like little side opinions where they had reservations about the, but they ultimately voted in the support of the TikTok ban.
Is this just
it was
the,
unanimous.
The court being made up of boomers that don't get it?
No, I don't know. I don't think it's so much about the technology as much as it is about the question of whether or not the government can ban a company of this kind. Does the federal government have that power?
Gotcha.
Now, if it's just straight interstate commerce, there's a majority on the Supreme Court that can say, hey, regulating domestic industry is a different question, right? We saw the end of Chevron doctrine and things like that. Those are major steps forward in that space. But keep in mind, this is the same folks that refuse to really address government censorship pressure by pretty much deferring to national security.
Wow.
So this is a classic, you know, Supreme Court refusing to get involved in key issues like this kind of question.
Well, and we had Senate Democrats, they introduced the Extend the TikTok Deadline Act to delay the TikTok ban for another 270 days, but that was blocked by the Republicans.
Yes.
That sounds right.
Happened, yes. Right?
Yep. Yep.
Sounds like something Republicans would do.
But it's also ironic that the people who are proposing to extend it are all people who voted for the ban.
Yeah. Well, it's also Trump himself has changed his tune on TikTok over the campaign cycle. And he became kind of like TikTok-y in his campaign stuff. He was doing all the stuff with all the TikTokers and all that.
Yeah.
And there was kind of a big push there that existed to get him to change his mind. And he verbally changed his mind at the time. So
interesting.
Yeah, has he weighed in since this has happened?
Well, apparently they're going to have the ByteDance guy at the inaugural event.
And not just at it, but on the dais alongside like Bezos and Zuckerberg and Sam Altman.
Mm.
So that's interesting.
Yeah,
that is interesting.
What's the signal there, do you think? Yeah. Does he intend to? I mean, it seems like he's made overtures that he intends to try to do some sort of executive action to not allow it to be banned. But like, is that something he can do?
Yeah, I don't know. Like all those people being there, it just kind of seems like he's just trying to court all these people. All these people have donated like $1 million to the inaugural fund and everything.
And that's what they get as a front row seat.
Yeah. Well, he's also putting on this like crypto ball and stuff that David Sacks is hosting on the night of the inaugural address. Like there's like this.
Are you invited?
No, VIP tickets. VIP tickets are like $10 million.
Holy fucking shit.
How much is your penguin worth these days?
Not that.
You should just go stand outside in a pudgy penguin costume and just be like, what is this?
Yeah, report from the ground. Report from the ground. Pudgy penguin.
Let me in, damn it.
Yeah, some of the details here. So the ban goes into effect on Sunday. This doesn't necessarily mean TikTok just gets banned from everybody's phones. It just, you're not going to be able to get updates for it from like American stores or re-download it from American stores. So people will still be able to use it,
but new people won't be able to access it.
Yeah. Unless you have like a modicum of technological savviness and you can get like a $2 VPN.
It's
not ways just, to not that hard
just target
to get around
for
it.
Canada, and you can get and update the app.
Canada, so land of the free.
The one base thing Canada is still doing, I guess.
I mean, you could put it in Mexico too if you want to, but you know, you can put all kinds of places.
You just can't put it anywhere but America.
Wow. Yeah, so is America the only country in the world that's banning TikTok right now?
I don't know if there's probably someone else that doesn't have it or something. I have no idea.
Yeah, there are other laws. There are other states around the world. I don't know exactly which ones. I remember reading about it when we were first covering the ban, that have regulations on TikTok, have constraints on TikTok, or have outright banned it. But I'm not sure which ones.
Well, and this gets reversed, too, if an American buys the company. So there's been a bunch of people saying that they're open to buying it. You have Kevin O'Leary, who's Canadian.
So I was going to say, does that apply?
I don't know if that would apply, but I don't know.
He lives in America, though.
Canada's right? Basically another state. I think under Trump, it's going to be another state.
Well, one of the narratives from the left is that this is a jaded move by Trump because he has been courted by Mark Andreessen, who owns part of ByteDance.
Oh, interesting.
That's interesting.
So he's being swayed by people who are influential in his campaign.
Yeah, right. So, which is also, that's like normal politics. That's like just all that stuff. And it's the right thing to do is not censor American speech.
Also, Mark Andreessen's based. So,
yeah.
He follows us.
You got to remember that the overt cause for this was China's bad, right? There was no proof that there's very little evidence that it was somehow being used maliciously to target Americans in some disastrous way. It was more so just like anxiety concerns about security of American data to China, even though they spent billions of dollars trying to assuage those fears by having it all hosted in Texas, by doing all this work, it still wasn't enough because China bad. But the timing of this cannot be ignored because there's the overt face, right? You're the thing you tell the world, and there's the real reasons you do things, right? And the real reason they did it, I think, and I think this has become pretty mainstream, was really had to do with Israel-Palestine.
Right. I think that's totally fair to say.
Yeah. So, and that was because, do you guys remember when Osama bin Laden's letter to America went viral on TikTok?
It was the Zionist push that got all the conservatives in an uproar.
Yeah. Yep. We had the leader of the ADL saying that the real problem is TikTok and the real problem is the youth. Yep. And if you see, you know, declining support for Israel because of Israel-Palestine war that's happened since October 7th amongst the youth demographic, that's really concerning because the youth demographic is a major demographic of the power base of the left. And they need that support for their activist class, for all kinds of things.
But, I mean, with the Israel-Palestine conflict coming to an end, which we'll get to later, is that such a problem anymore, really?
Well, yeah, right, because they need to control. I mean, if you think less like a regular person and more like an intel officer, what you want is total information control dominance, right? You don't want to give up your lead in that space. They've really, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but my feed has not looked like, it wasn't until 60 Minutes came out with some new stuff on Israel-Palestine. I've seen anything on Israel-Palestine for months, but it used to be all over my feed every single day. So X has obviously changed a lot of their content. I don't know if they're taking things down or just deprioritizing the algorithm, trying to make less horror, you know, experience.
Yeah, I'd see like 3 Palestinians getting killed a day on Twitter for a long time.
Yeah,
and like most of the time, like actually watching people getting killed constantly.
Well, and I mean this may have shifted around the time that Elon said he was going to start the algorithm was going to start prioritizing
happiness.
What was it called? It was like non-regrettable Joy. Minutes.
No, yeah. I think this is before that.
Oh, really?
This is well before that. Yeah, it was months before
that. But that's always been his attitude, is just like, did you enjoy your time being spent? Like, that's always what he's claimed the purpose of.
Should have been showing more Kamala.
The progressives who are really...
needed more joy. There wasn't enough joy.
The progressives who really track this issue tightly, tighter than I do, admittedly, is what had more to do with the timing of around when he went to Israel and all that stuff.
When Elon went to Israel.
Yeah. Well, and it's important to remember... One, we've talked about Facebook back in 2019 getting hit by the ADL and that causing a $60 billion market drop back then. And then everything kind of started to change its tune after that. Boycott that happened with X after Elon took over. That was ADL led. It was like, oh, it's an anti-Semitic platform.
Go
and all this stuff, right?
Yourself.
and then when TikTok comes in, it's all revolving around the Israel-Palestine conflict. These are military ops,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Around social media.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, efforts to wield the political power, they've spent a lot of money to accumulate. I mean, a lot of money, right? And a lot of influence, a lot of effort. When you have it, you got to spend it when the time is right. And I think, you know, from a strategic point of view, this is exactly the time is right for Israel, right? Because as Trump admitted, they're losing the media war on this. I mean, it's just they just cannot keep their support up. And it's become unpopular in many ways. And ultimately, and I think the larger question of the Osama bin Laden letter, and you point that out, had less to do with the yuckiness of Osama bin Laden getting support in that sense. Although that's how like the boomer media covered it. It had more to do with young people kind of discovering foreign policy for the first time.
Yeah.
What war's really like.
Yeah.
And
the real reasoning behind why we were attacked.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't for our freedom, kids. And they're like, whoa.
They had their Ron Paul moment.
Yeah. I think a lot of that was happening. And
well, it's also just like being able to see things from different perspectives. Like you can understand like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe the reason why they attacked us isn't just because they hate us for our freedoms. Maybe they actually have actual grievances. Now, does it make it right or wrong? Like, that's not the conversation that's being had there. Like, should he have thrown planes into the building? Probably not. That's not necessarily a moral thing.
Don't say probably, Kyle. It just sounds wrong when you say probably.
That's true.
No.
But when he puts out this, like he verbalizes it and being like, there's American bases all around our places. They're changing our way of life. They're doing all this stuff. Like he has this like thing. You're like, oh, okay. I can kind of get that.
Yeah.
I can kind of get why you're all uppity right now.
Right.
Right. And so if you're a Democrat, it really begins to make sense in an election year to say, I want to ban TikTok. I'm going to vote for that. That's why all these Democrats who are now trying to stop it voted for it. Right. And this is how it played out too. I mean, tremendous amount of people did not vote for, Kamala because of Israel-Palestine, because they refused to really put pressure on Israel. And we'll get into that when we get to there. But but these are related phenomena, right? For the conservatives, I mean, it's just the Israel first is such a huge part of the conservative ethos on the right, at least of the boomer cons. So that all, and then I think some of them legitimately believe it's some kind of op by China to destroy America somehow by dance videos, right? That's why the myths all persist, right? It doesn't matter that they add a little STEM thing to the top of TikTok, so anyone who wants to can go view STEM videos. They don't have they add that, and like people are still like, oh, did you know that they do STEM videos in China, but they don't do, you know, thought videos in China?
Yeah,
you know, and that's actually what's happening with Red Note right now. So a bunch of young people moved over to a different Chinese video sharing app, basically saying, screw you, we love our Chinese video sharing app.
Which is so awesome. Number
one in the app store, just blew up like crazy. And now there's like this interesting, you know, translation, because that's all China. Like it's Chinese servers, it's a Chinese app, it's all in Mandarin. Right, you got to translate stuff to use it.
The backfire is just so ironic.
I did see Duolingo put out this tweet and showed that they've had this massive spike in people learning Mandarin.
No shit.
Yeah,
dude. What if the TikTok?
I don't know if that was a troll from their corporate account.
Okay,
like,
okay.
Pretty funny.
Tinfoil hat moment. What if the TikTok ban is an op to get people onto more Chinese servers?
I can't inception my way through all these fucking psyops.
They're psyoping the psyop.
Like, god damn it.
And so people are theorizing, oh, well, this is TikTok is trying to do this just so that they can maintain. This is how the boomer cons are reacting, right? TikTok doesn't want to get banned because they want to keep their surveillance of Americans alive and all that kind of stuff. But it also could be that they like making money.
Ooh.
You know, I mean, just think about that for a minute. This is a huge business, an enormous business. So that has spent billions and billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars to appease lawmakers to this point. And, you know, with no satisfaction. Because their algorithm gives people what they're interested in and, you know, they want that control.
Yeah, they're sort of, it seems like, and we've talked about this before, reversing the correlation or causation between the decline of culture and an app that gives people what they want. They're thinking the app is what's declining the culture and like rotting our kids' brains. But really, it's like this is this culture of like idolizing influencers and, you know, celebrities has been a part of American culture for a lot longer than TikTok.
Which was kind of Vivek's whole point in his culture argument.
Oh, during the H-1B you can't say that
right,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, look at us. We're trying to become influencers and you're helping.
Well, I mean, the world is moving towards an influence game. Like influence in a lot of ways is going to be the currency. Like everything's going to be digitized. Everything's going to be tokenized. Influence is going to be tokenized. And that's kind of where the world is going right now. So these companies have a lot of power in where the future is.
And people don't like that power. That's what Biden's comments were. It's like he doesn't like that Elon owns X and isn't fact checking, meaning isn't allowing the censorship industrial complex to tell him what can and can't be said on the platform.
And Zuckerberg took away theirs, and they're going for a community notes method now too.
And that, that is literally the same as war profiteering, to be clear. Mm-hmm. Just that is the same thing.
Yeah.
And
the,
I saw something
the tech
also
oligarchs are on the rise. Those were the words that he used later in his stuff, is that there's a rise of tech oligarchs, and he tried to equate it to the military industrial complex speech of Eisenhower.
As if those tech oligarchs weren't on his side 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck?
Dude? Well, the tech oligarchs.
How stupid do you think
the tech oligarchs have had a civil war? Like, that's what's happened, is that there's been a civil war, and some have split rank from the regime side that Biden has been under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the part that kind of pissed me off the most about him saying that. It's like he was the one, his administration was the one focused on censorship with the Hunter Biden laptop.
No, he's pretty much Eisenhower, dude. That's pretty much what
No, they're definitely the same. He's definitely
what was
it, the
what
same.
What was
to
Biden's D Day?
Ukraine? No, that started before. Or actually, no, it didn't.
Started during Biden.
During, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably a flight of stairs.
That trip up Air Force One, wasn't it?
Yes. That kid that didn't let him touch him.
Shaking the hand of someone who wasn't even there.
That time we thought he shit his pants on stage. I love it. This is just like a trip down memory lane of all the Biden gaffe moments. Remember that time?
Oh, fall on a bicycle.
The bicycle was huge. Yeah, remember the time he equated the Maui fires to a small fire in his kitchen?
That didn't happen.
Yeah, and the fire didn't even happen in his kitchen too.
Wait, did you guys? All right, not to bring us down too much of a rabbit hole. Did you hear his most recent thing with the LA fires, where he was talking to people? I think it was the LA fires. I'm almost positive. And he's like, "Well, the good news is I'm a great grandfather."
Oh yeah, I did hear that.
What?
It was like in the middle of an event about the LA fires. And he's like, "Well, the good news is I'm a grandfather." It's like, bro.
It's like, Jesus Christ, read the room.
Incredible.
Wow.
Can he read?
Bennett, we need you to make a montage of Biden. It's just like remembering Biden.
Yes.
All the glorious
some really dreamy music and a nice filter.
After Monday, I'm taking him off the soundboard.
He's just gone.
Yeah,
he doesn't exist anymore.
Would you do Kamala too, please?
Yes.
Thanks.
So
I mean, there's only one on there, but yeah.
That's fine.
The confirmation hearings are starting. Yeah.
How are those going so far? What are your thoughts?
So it's a combination of super spicy and snooze fest, and it's so predictable which ones are which.
That's exactly it. It's like you can guess which ones are like, you know,
Rubio.
Like, okay, that's the one that's going to be like everybody's Kavanaugh-ing, and then there's like the Rubio one, who's the person who we were like the least interested in.
Yeah.
In this, it was like, yeah, that's the snooze fest.
Yeah.
It's exactly for all the reasons you would expect.
I listened to all of Hegseth and most of, and about three quarters of Rubio, and Rubio was just, it was just layups. It was just softballs, like, here you go. You know, you're so great. Like, it was just, oh my god,
one of us.
I just saw like small snippets of the Rubio one. Like, was there much combativeness that was coming from the Democrats or anything?
It was really like, I mean, the most it got to was the typical Democrats things. It's like, will you say no to Trump? Like and that's like the dumbest question. You know, you're literally being put in this cabinet, like, will you say no to the president if he decides to become a totalitarian dictator of America? It's like, when did you stop beating your wife? Constantly. That's just every other question. There was a few of those. Most of it was, you know, we need to do better at the State Department. Like, this was not
insightful.
Yeah,
very insightful.
Yeah, real great stuff.
Yeah,
but Hegseth,
good work.
They went good all job, Kavanaugh job. On this guy. Like, I mean, just do you guys remember Kavanaugh? Do you remember the Kavanaugh?
Yeah,
hearings?
Why don't you refresh?
I've heard of him.
Yeah,
refresh the audience on the Kavanaugh situation.
So a tectonic change happened in Trump's first term, with the death of I'm forgetting her name. All of a sudden.
RGB.
Yes.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
RBG. Yeah.
Ruth Slay Queen.
Bader Ginsburg. And a replacement of another judge. And what was the third one? There was three judges that came in during Trump.
Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, and Gorsuch?
Yeah. What was Amy Coney Barrett's? So one of it was the death of a conservative judge. One was RBG.
Alito,
was,
I think, right?
Was it Alito? No,
Alito's still there.
Oh, is he? Oh,
shit. Who am I forgetting?
Yeah.
Gorsuch replaced what's his name? Like I'm losing my mind right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Started with an S.
Why am I spacing on his name right now?
Yeah, he's like one of the most famous
Scalise.
Original
Scalise, yes.
One of the most famous originalist judges. And then Amy Coney Barrett. So with Gorsuch, it was relatively uncontroversial because he's replacing a conservative judge with another conservative judge.
Well, it wasn't super because that was also the one where that happened at the end of the Obama administration, and they were trying to get old what's his name.
That's true.
And the Republicans blocked it until Trump came in. Right? Yeah,
and it was and he is a gangster. Like Gorsuch is really good, from my point of view. From an originalist, strict constructionist point of view, when the Kavanaugh came in, it was changing a Democrat-appointed, very liberal judge to now a Republican-esque judge. I mean, who isn't nearly as strict and constructionist as Gorsuch. And they went to the wall trying to destroy this man's character. They accused him of literally gang group sex, I guess is the word, running a train on this woman who
trying to avoid the YouTube words.
being an alcoholic and like crazy party days. That's where the whole sometimes I drink beer and I like beer.
Remember that? Yeah, because it was all this stuff from back like 30 years ago when he was in college.
Yeah,
and there was a woman that came out
saying that he did all these things, and there was no evidence, no witnesses, nothing.
She was a hero of the world,
and she was obviously an unstable lady, obviously like having some psychological problems. And the Democrats exploited that to the 10th degree. I mean, it was
much like that woman in the Trump case.
Yeah, it's very similar to what was her name though, the department store.
Yeah, I ever remember from
Eugene
her.
Eugene Carroll, was that?
Eugene Carroll. Yeah, yes. All Eugene. I ever remember Eugene. All I ever really remember from her is when she was on the Cooper's show on CNN, and as they're going to break, she's just like, "You're a fascinating man." She's so weird.
Wow. She's a weird lady. Anyways,
slight digression.
They went this way with Hegseth in a pretty gross and disgusting way. We'll dive into the clips here, and you guys can see for yourself exactly how that played out.
What became very evident to us from the beginning, there was a coordinated smear campaign orchestrated in the media against us. All they were out to do, Mr. Chairman, was to destroy me. And why do they want to destroy me? Because I'm a change agent and a threat to them, because Donald Trump was willing to choose me, to empower me, to bring the Defense Department back to what it really should be, which is warfighting. So I am willing to endure these attacks. But what I will do is stand up for the truth and for my reputation.
If you are saying that women shouldn't be serving in the military, and I'm going to read you your quotes, because the quotes themselves are terrible. You will have to change how you see women to do this job well, and I don't know if you are capable of that. You've denigrated active duty service members. We have hundreds of women who are currently in the infantry, lethal members of our military serving in the infantry, but you degrade them. You say, we need moms, but not in the military, especially in combat units.
I have never disparaged women serving in the military. I respect every single female service member that has put on the uniform past and present. My critiques, Senator, recently and in the past, and from personal experience, have been instances where I've seen standards lower.
To use our military to take over Greenland or
based
an ally of Denmark.
Senator, one of the things that President Trump is so good at is never strategically tipping his hand. And so I would never in this public forum give one way or another direct what orders the president give me in any context.
That sounds to me that you would contemplate carrying out such an order.
So you think you are completely cleared because you committed no crime. That's your definition of cleared. You had just fathered a child 2 months before by a woman that was not your wife. I am shocked that you would stand here and say you're completely cleared. Can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before and you tell us you are completely cleared?
Behind me.
You've admitted that you...
We'll stop it there. Remember when he was a vice president candidate?
Yeah.
Old Kane?
No, I don't.
He was under Clinton.
No, I mean, I do, but I don't.
Nobody does.
Forgettable.
And hopefully that's where Kamala goes too. Just everybody forgets.
The dustbin of history, as they say.
Yeah. So they went pretty hard on him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he did have some sort of a sordid personal background, right? Which they obviously played into pretty heavily on this.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, should you in politics be able to bring up someone's personal life to a degree, especially in people who are going to wield power? What bothers me is the accusations of him drinking when there's literally a bar in Congress.
That Nancy Pelosi created.
This was a moment in there. There was one of the Republican defenders of him had this moment where he was just like, raise your hand, everybody, if you've ever come to work drunk. Like, I already know the answer. Most of you have. I've seen you.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, the sheer hypocrisy of it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think that's good. I don't want the Secretary of Defense to be drunk on the job.
Certainly not.
Especially when you're being asked by a woman who sounds like she's drunk if he drinks on the job. You know, like,
that's why I said, who the fuck is that?
I think one of the future clips we have, I think there's another one where you're like, oh, wow.
But then I was also like slurring. I was also a little concerned. And off camera, I was like, wait, did she have a stroke?
You didn't want to make an offhand comment. And then
I would never do such things.
No. That's not like you.
Yeah, so the big part of this is the change agent question, right? So their expectation is to get the illusion of nonpartisanship out of the office of the DOD. But every single person who's ever been a Secretary of Defense has political ideas, believe it or not.
Imagine that.
There's this whole fantasy, and it's a progressive one, and I'm always harping on this, is that if you just put smart people in charge who are unbiased, they will lose all of the things that make them human, right? They're not going to. I mean, we literally had a moment where they were kicking people out of the military, you know, for vaccines. Was that a political decision? The DEI that they're complaining about and kind of going back and forth on, like the whole women in the military, that's a political decision, right? And how to prioritize those things and whether or not to lower standards in order so that you can have more of a different demographic or more representative demographic. And for the people, if you listen to Hegseth, his claim is that a lot of the leadership is walking on eggshells to the point where they are less focused on the lethality of their combat unit and more focused on solving a political problem, which is making sure that everyone is inclusively included. Right.
Well said. Well said.
Well, and there is this element too of, like, he said he's a change agent, and that's probably the best way of describing who the boring hearings were and who the more eventful hearings were, is how much change the perception is that they're going to bring to their given cabinet role in that moment. Like, you're going to have the Kash Patels, you're going to have the Tulsi Gabbards, you're going to have the Pete Hegsethes, right? Or you're going to have the Marco Rubios.
Right. And RFK also in the
RFK is going to be, that's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
That's going to be a crazy one.
When does that happen? Do we know? Is that
soon,
scheduled?
Oh, no. Next few weeks. About
soon.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's important to know too, and it kind of cuts it short in that clip set from Iowa News Now, that a lot of these accusations against him are just speculation. It's anonymous reporting based upon anonymous sources.
Some things he got cleared in court too, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's the next part of this clip. But there's a real question there. Like, to what degree is Congress kind of be clowning themselves by doing this sort of Kavanaughing issue. Now, it does appease donors, like hyper-partisan Democrats. Like, yeah, you got to stick it to them. You got to hold them accountable. But I think in general, what this means is that the Democrats are now enforcing the institution, right? They're more interested in the illusion of an unbiased institution when everyone knows it's not unbiased. Everyone knows it's corrupt and has all these problems. Rather than, you know, doing the thing that actually Americans want, which is reform.
Right.
They're more interested in just sticking it to them on personal attacks. Which I think American people see through.
If there's one thing that Congress likes, it's the status quo, right? So obviously, to the change agent point, they don't want anybody coming in and ruffling feathers, rocking the boat, you know, upsetting the donor class or whatever. So of course, you know, they're going to stick to their partisan guns and do what they do, right?
Yes, right. So in Hegseth, as far as for the politics of it all, I mean, like, he's claimed to be a victim of the very kind of politicalization of the system that already exists. He has a tattoo that apparently was in his book. He writes in The War on Warriors that this tattoo that he has with the Jerusalem cross got him eliminated from being able to work in the National Guard on a particular mission. In this case, it was the inauguration of Joe Biden.
He was specifically told that he couldn't come.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he discovered in writing the book that...
As a volunteer.
The reason why was because of that.
Now, not because that, because he had tattoos. Obviously, lots of military service members have tattoos. It was this specific insignia.
Yes. And claiming that he was a white nationalist because of it.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was told that he couldn't come during the inauguration.
Because they were concerned he would...
Well, because he was going to be a volunteer in, like, in the defense of it all and stuff like that.
So they thought he would be a rogue actor of some kind?
Yeah, because he's a white nationalist, so he's going to be against Biden, and you can't trust that.
Well, it's a demonstration of the kind of inter-politics of it, right? So someone finds his Facebook page, sees he has this tattoo that they don't like, he knows a Fox News commentator, he's in the National Guard, and so they complain to the higher-ups, and the higher-ups go like, whoa, white nationalist, someone said the W word. So we're just going to just get this off our plate and away from us rather than, you know, worrying about having the best people on the job. You're worrying about the politics of it, right? Which is his claim, right? That's the claim. And then lastly, the conflating women in the military with women in combat, right? And what that means. And there, I think that's, we got to have a discussion, guys, in the country about this question. And we're getting all this pushback on our DEI comments, which we were so temperate about on the LA fire situation. And we said, you know, DEI could be a lack of prioritization, right? Maybe you should prioritize less of that and more on fire
mitigation.
That
was literally always said.
Said it was the least compelling point.
We said it held the least amount of weight for the whole thing.
But it's a religious symbol for a lot of people.
That's just fucking Christ.
Yeah, so this thing.
Him too.
I mean, it's it is quite slimy to say he opposes women in the military because he doesn't do that. What he says is what we want is to make sure standards are not lowered, and they have been in his experience, and he actually is on the ground, and the senator, you know, has been retired longer. She was an ex-CIA agent that was questioning him there, Gillibrand, and that's a concern for him, right? And he said maybe we shouldn't have women in combat roles if they can't make those standards, but that's something we need to accept if that's true. Dealing with reality that you got to, or artillery positions that you have to carry around 100-pound artillery shells all day. Now, when I worked in landscaping, there are a few women who could work with us in landscaping, but not many, right? When we were carrying around 100-pound concrete blocks to build a retention wall, that's really, really hard labor. And if you're doing that all day, every day, like you might be able to do it a day, but can you do it 5 days?
Back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a different sort of thing. And like, and in business, we recognize that there are some limitations. We put it on the business description, have to be able to carry around this much weight. Should we do that in the military? Well, yeah, it seems like a reasonable case.
For sure.
Can't believe you didn't lower it to 50 pounds for women.
Can you throw a 225-pound guy with a 50-pound pack on your back and run him out of a combat zone?
Yeah.
That seems like a reasonable qualification.
Right. And then there's always questions there, right? There's exceptions to that rule. There could be roles that don't require that. But it's a lot like the LA fire thing. Remember the new LA fire transgender chief saying, well, if your husband is in the fire...
He got himself into a bad situation already.
In the wrong place. Yeah, he's in the wrong place. If I have to carry him out, it's like...
That wasn't the chief.
Oh, sorry.
That was a different firefighter.
But, oh, okay.
But, yeah. accurate description of what was said.
Exactly that problem.
Yeah.
All I'm hearing is David's not going to be getting a cabinet position anytime soon.
Well, I'll,
with
and
all
I'm
these
even,
opinions.
I'm open to women in combat roles. I just think you have to have the high standard. That totally makes sense. I think that actually blows back on the Democrats because I think people are tired of hearing. Have now clued in on the manipulation here. That there's a sleight of hand when you say women in the military versus women in roles that are lowering standards.
Oh, we've spent over a decade dealing with all of this like hypersensitive political jargon talk that's been going, and people are just over it. And people are looking at there and they're just like, I mean, makes sense. Hegseth makes sense. That's what the average person's looking at with it right now.
Well, the culture shifted too, and Joe Rogan's a lot of to blame of this in that. Men in women's combat sports implies something, right?
Yes.
And then for a long time for me, it was actually kind of confusing why that was such a big issue for people. They were like, oh my God, women in combat sports or men in, you know, transgenders in sports and stuff like that. And that is a major issue. They thought that was more important. That rose up faster and more hard than transitioning children, right? Which was weird to me. I just couldn't explain it. But when you look at this kind of phenomena, it kind of becomes clear if biological men can't compete in women's sports, should you have a woman in a combat role alongside men when part of the job might be to carry a man out of fire?
Again, I think if the standards are met, and there should be standards for everything, you know, meritocracy should return, and I think it is, mm-hmm. under, you know, this new cultural ethos that seems like a lot more people are adopting, even, you know, some on the moderate left who are seeing, you know, sort of the insanity here that we've been talking about. Yeah, I think absolutely. If you can meet the standard, go for it. Can I raise a question here really quick? So I'm just curious, like on a technical level, as far as votes go for these confirmations, how many votes does Hegseth need, and how many Democrats need to cross the aisle to vote for him?
I'm pretty sure it's zero Democrats. I think it's just a straight 51.
So this is really just ceremonial. Yeah. Is that the case for all of the appointments?
I believe so. I don't know.
Yeah,
don't,
simple
I don't
majority.
I don't think
51.
It's different for different.
If it breaks down partisanly, you're fine.
So Hegseth will obviously, I would assume, get voted for confirmation by all the Republicans. So yep. They won't need any Democrats. But when it comes to Tulsi or RFK, you might be peeling some Republicans away from that coalition, in which case you would need Democrats to vote for them.
That is the goal of Kavanaugh, is making the media environment so toxic that that scares off the weak Republicans. That's the point of it.
Weak Republicans, yeah. Always a problem.
Which is kind of what happened with Gates, right?
True.
Is there's just too much stuff that came out, and it's just like, bro, you got to go.
Can't get it done.
Yeah.
Which is how most of the stuff works. It's just like too much of a headache now.
Yeah,
can't deal with it. You're going to bog things down if this continues. Got to move on.
One of the other challenges that Democrats brought up was his history of leading different foundations and kind of the question. I mean, there's millions of people who work in the U.S. different Department of Defense. Can he lead an organization of that size? He has had some leadership roles, specifically in Vets for Freedom and Concerned Veterans for America. I looked at the information kind of backlining that. There was like debt in the organization, failures to raise enough money. All of these things correlate with things that I'm familiar with working in the foundation world, and none of it looks completely crazy to me. Things like, oh, you guys had parties where there was alcohol. Ooh. At a veterans event. You're like, well, I mean,
like, <dare you>.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't know all of the Senate were teetotalers now.
Yeah, seriously.
And then things like fundraising and questioning whether or not he could conduct a Pentagon audit, which is the height of absolute ridiculousness, because they've been confirming all these people in nonpartisan ways forever. All these people, and they have failed. The Pentagon has failed every single budget audit for a decade.
Right? Right? I think they're eight for eight. It started back in 2018, and they failed every single one.
Yeah,
remember when they just lost money too?
So
they're just like, we don't know where it is.
So them being like, are you capable of auditing an organization? And like, well, one, you audit organizations when they fail, and these organizations weren't audited per se, right? They did have financial problems sometimes, but all foundations had financial problems in 2008, 2009 during the financial crisis.
Oh, for sure.
Unless you have, at least that's for Vets for Freedom. And CVA, you know, they have, like all organizations, before they were bought out by a major donor, by the Freedom Partners, and at the time it was Freedom Partners, and now it's called Stand Together, the Koch Network, They had financial problems, up and down financial issues, fundraising. Fundraising's really hard. You're literally asking people, hey, will you give me money for no reason other than the tax benefit? And if it's a 501c4, you don't even get that. So it like it's the most raised in area in nonprofits, fundraisers, because it's the hardest, one of the hardest jobs in that area. Because it's very difficult. So it's like the hardest sales job you've ever done. So like I don't see any real problem there. I looked carefully at those claims, and there's just no there there, especially when you include the absolute hypocrisy of these non-political appointees formerly in the role completely failing audits for forever now. He did have comments in his book about the Geneva Convention, the rules of engagement that they challenged him on, which I did think was more substantive. Like that was the most substantive it got.
What was that about?
Well, specifically, he's complaining about rules of engagement that really undermine the ability for warfighters to protect themselves, right? And there are cases that, you know, where America went above and beyond the Geneva Convention into some ways to win hearts and minds that were maybe more destructive than they were helpful in keeping warfighters able to conduct the mission. But this is also the just the problem of the mission itself. When you're nation building, you have a very different set of problems than if you are just going in to, you know, defend your country.
Right.
And that's where and that's really where it takes off too. Ultimately, the grand strategic design were these senators voting for all the grand strategic design that he served in these wars in. And that was the broken part. Not the rules of engagement. It's sitting in Iraq for 20 years, in Afghanistan for 20 years.
I bet he didn't bring that up.
Well, he brought it up in the Sean Ryan show, and he and I was really impressed with it. I mean, when he brought it up in the Sean Ryan show, he said, at the time I thought Iraq was a great idea, and now I think it was for Halliburton. You know, I mean, yep. Like that's a big pivot, and something that we need in the State Department is someone who's actually looking at the grand strategic question with a little bit more skepticism.
For sure.
So
I can't imagine that would have gone over very well had he called them out on that.
Yeah.
In his confirmation hearing, but.
Yeah. So the talking heads also went to the wall to continue the Kavanaughing. And I have this former Democratic strategist, Julie Ranowski, lady on the far right here. And her comments on Hegseth and the Jerusalem Cross and all this stuff.
Was written himself while at Princeton saying that women who are passed out, if you have sex with them while they're unconscious, that's not really rape. Right? Now, the American military has a tremendous sexual assault problem, a horrible sexual assault problem. I have spoken to women in the military who say on deployment, it's not a question of if, but a question of when they will be sexually assaulted.
Yeah, so that's a lie because she's conflating him being the editor of a student newspaper called the Princeton Tory at the time when someone else wrote an article saying, basically arguing whether, and I'm not defending it, I'm only saying this is a technical legal argument that the guy's making, a little trying to be technical, on PC, maybe even terrible idea, but basically claiming that simple unconsciousness is not a qualification for rape itself.
But it wasn't Hegseth that wrote that?
No, she just straight up lied about that. And basically she's saying he didn't say no to this person publishing in the paper, their opinion, and therefore he supports it, which is the dumbest, you know, two brain cells rubbing together sort of, you know, possible case for him writing it or him supporting the idea.
That's a real stretch.
Yeah. But this is the sort of character assassination that is now defining the Democrat Party. And I, once again, I do not think it's going, people are going to see through it. It's just, it's completely ridiculous.
It feels like they've learned nothing since the election.
Yeah.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like the same Democrat stuff.
Well, maybe they'll go down with the ship.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Good. Well, there is a civil war that's been brewing among there. Like, we're just kind of seeing the more crazy of the talking heads or the more kind of exaggerative types. But there's a lot of people within the Democratic sphere that are kind of pushing back against it. So it might not be fair to say, like, they're all just going to go down with the ship.
I mean, I would say I would just like to see a lot of the like really spurious talking heads like just fade into obscurity. And I think they are. I mean, with the rise of alternative media, I mean, I guess this is sort of alternative media. It's Piers Morgan's show, which he does, you know, online as well as on a network.
He's like the only person that's made the transition well.
Is this still on a network or is this just strictly an internet-based show?
I think it's just his YouTube.
Yeah, it's his YouTube channel.
Interesting that he's been successful with that, and yet, you know, he's bringing on people like this. And I don't know if anybody else on the panel,
but
you know,
he, like, he brings in all the internet
total
people.
Opposite ends though to yeah, he, kind of yeah. get the
he gets
going,
all of
basically.
The internet people to come in and debate each other of like all sorts of varying extreme views.
True. Right? And to his credit, he's had Scott Horton, he's had Dave Smith, you know, yeah. a lot of principled, you know,
yeah, he'll have, and then he'll have the more people on the progressive side, like the more big commentators in there. He'll have the Destinies of the World on. He'll have, you know, then he'll have.
I don't respect that.
But then he'll also have Candace on. You know, like yeah, it's
no small for thing. Sure. And so that straight up lie is also followed by other like disinformation, ironically, on what his tattoos mean. And I think this is an important part of it because this is a crux of the issue. I know it's dumb to debate tattoos, but it's a real thing.
And as for the cross that you talked about, yes, Deus Vult, which is the cross that he has and the slogan that he has.
Deus Vult is a
phrase. An old Christian cross. The phrase, however, was uttered by crusaders as they were slaughtering Jews and Muslims during the Second Crusade specifically. So it's not just a random cross.
That isn't a random phrase. That isn't
it
true.
Is a
the phrase that
it's
isn't
not true.
True.
It is
the phrase,
true.
The phrase was uttered after the Council of Clermont when Pope Urban II declared the crusade. And it was actually probably Dieu le veut, but it's been rendered in Latin as Deus Vult. It has nothing to do with slaughtering
Jews.
It has nothing to do with slaughtering Muslims because the Muslims had invaded Europe, not the other way around.
Oh, my God. Are you really saying that the reason the crusade, which was sent to the Holy Land to liberate the Holy Land, from whom? From Jews and Muslims?
The crusade began because the Eastern Emperor asked for help from the Western Pope because the Seljuk Turks were slaughtering Christians in the Holy Land because those lands were Christian before the Muslims invaded in the 7th century.
I like how we just get a nice little history lesson there. We're just debating the
Michael
history
Michael knows nailed it. But I mean, that's one of the things that I think, you know, on all sides, people's like view of history is like this, you know, very chunked in what it means in a very short phrase, right? There's like this condensing of it.
You also put our kind of modern morality on top of it, everything, and we try to like justify things or unjustify things based off of like what our current moral, like our progressive principles are of our current standpoint. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, they were so disrespectful towards that group or that group. Just like, yeah, it's also 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, and also a story that is much older, too. Muslims were invading Europe for hundreds of years before the Crusades. So if you see Europe not as a collection of states, which it was and wasn't, city-states and, you know, all kinds of things, but rather as Christendom, then all of a sudden becomes a war between civilizations, in which case one attacked and the other one returned attacks. And defensive use of force and all those kinds of theories of just war all of a sudden come to play, and it doesn't paint the easy picture of, you know, oppressed bad Muslim minority always being persecuted by the Christians, right? And yeah. Typical.
Yeah.
We had another interesting committee or Senate hearing here on the committee appointments. We had for Attorney General Pam Bondi. Now, I didn't know much about her going into this. Mm-hmm. Who is this woman?
American attorney, lobbyist for private prisons.
Yeah, she was part of the
not based it?
The GCO group, I think, yeah. is what they're called, which is a private prison lobby. Mm-hmm.
And served as a Florida Attorney General from 2011 to 2019.
I also saw she did a bunch of lobbying work in around like 2019, 2020 when it came to anti human trafficking. She was involved with a Qatari group during the World Cup and everything that was going on there. So she has like an anti-human trafficking background.
Yeah. And she was also played a role in the first impeachment defense on behalf of Trump. Mm-hmm. So Trump loyalist of sorts is how she's kind of reputationally. Yeah. Yeah. So we have this clip from her testimony kind of summarizing a few of the questions.
Department of Justice prosecutors will be prosecuted in the Trump administration. What Department of Justice prosecutors will be prosecuted and why?
Why?
I said that on TV. I said prosecutors will be prosecuted to finish the quote, if bad. Investigators will be investigated. You know, we all take an oath, Senator, to uphold the law. None of us are above the law. Let me give you a really good example of a bad lawyer within the Justice Department, a guy named Klein Smith. who altered a FISA warrant, one of the most important things we can do in this country. So will everyone be held to an equal, fair system of justice if I am the next attorney general? Absolutely. And no one is above the law.
Under what circumstances will you prosecute journalists for what they write?
I believe in the freedom of speech. Only if anyone commits a crime. It's pretty basic, Senator, with anything, with any victim. And this goes back to my entire career for 18 years as a prosecutor and then 8 years as Florida's Attorney General. You find the facts of the case. You apply the law in good faith and you treat everyone fairly.
Yeah, you pause it
good
there.
Answer. So, you guys remember Klein Smith?
I don't.
Yeah, so he was the guy that went to jail for basically committing fraud on a FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign in 2016.
Mm.
So that's what she's talking about. She's saying, like, and this is where they're really defending the institutions, like really defending. And that was really characteristic of Pam Bondi's confirmation hearing, which I think she's going to fly through. It's not going to be a problem. But and the same with Pete Guy. I think the partisan breakdown will make that happen because I don't think these things are landing. But with Pam, the Democrats really took the role of the institutions are unquestionable. We shouldn't prosecute people based upon crimes in office, but the president should be, but not all the people working for the president doing things that are crimes.
Legit crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how all of these people kind of became like famous people. Like the left really propped these people up, all the people that were part of that time frame, like the Russia hoax, all this stuff. And because this guy kind of became like kind of celebrity, if I remember right, didn't he?
Well, no, I mean, he's been defended by Democrats as if it's been, I think it's been a relatively weak defense because the case was so overwhelming and they want to keep the scandal of Russiagate down. So I think he's a bit of a sacrificial lamb. Klein Smith, specifically. Now, when it comes to Jack Smith.
The special prosecutor.
Right? Yeah. That is, you know, obviously, you know, more of like he's a cause celebrity for the left because he's going after Trump, regardless of his system.
Well, it's the same thing. Like, remember Avenatti, the lawyer?
Yeah.
Like, there was a point in time where the left was trying to recruit him to run for president.
Yeah.
Are we talking about, is that Stormy Daniels lawyer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was.
He got brought up in committee by by our Kennedy, one of our favorite senators, jokester, as an example of bad lawyers, right?
Well, it just kind of goes to show of who the institution will uphold and kind of convince you is worship worthy, and then who they'll try to beat down. Like, we can watch it, and this is a good example of watching this right here, of like, or they'll just kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever, Rubio, go on through, you know, like it'll just be kind of that. Yes. But then the people that are the change agents or the people that might have some sort of change aspect, and it might even just be like those small little things, but those small little things kind of matter. Mm-hmm. And it might not even matter necessarily in our minds, but you're just like, wait, why is everybody getting all like in a tizzy about that one particular thing? It's just like, it's interesting to watch where the energy goes. Like, just the energy is interesting.
It is also frustrating to see Democrats who supported the Obama administration talk about prosecuting journalists. It was the Obama administration who invoked the Espionage Act of 1917 for their surveillance and harassment of journalists and leaks out of the Obama White House.
Interesting.
It wasn't Trump. It was Obama.
To find who was leaking information out of the Obama White House.
Yes. And using espionage as a case for doing that. That's like Russia shit. Right? That's literally what we're talking about when we say that Russia is prosecuting American journalists. Is a journalist who's accused of espionage in Russia and who's now in prison. Wall Street Journal journalist. I forget the guy's name.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're asking like, oh my God, are you going to use the AG, the office of the AG, to punish your political enemies? It's like, we've been going through that. This isn't a new thing. It's just everything's flipped. And it's like, it doesn't even seem like they're doing that, right?
Well, it was the lizard lady from the DNC saying that Trump was going to do that.
Yes, remember the lizard lady. That's right.
So James Risen was a New York Times reporter. For years, he was pursued by the Obama administration for detailing a story on CIA operation against Iran's nuclear program. And he literally was facing jail time for reporting about the CIA. So it's the hypocrisy is so profound. Yeah,
it is. But I mean, do you expect anything different?
I mean, yeah, I mean, this is politics. this is what it is. But I think with the new information environment, will Americans see through it? Will it be enough to intimidate enough Republicans? Well, I think they can afford to lose like two to get under 51, you know, to change their vote. I just don't think so. I mean, that's just, I don't think it's going to work. And they did a good job defending themselves. Pam Bondi crushed it on pushing back. Now, is she a perfect person for the AG? She does support red flag laws. So note that.
Not, I mean, so
she's
good.
Kind of a liberal in that sense.
For the audience, what are red flag laws?
Red flag laws are if you're accused of having a mental problem, you get your Second Amendment rights taken away from you.
Doesn't sound like shall not be infringed to me.
Yeah, well, particularly devastating for veterans, right? That's the real victim in that crowd.
Well, I mean, it's so nebulous too. I mean, to be accused of having a mental instability or illness of some kind is like such a fraught benchmark for determining someone's safety with a firearm. That's just insane to me.
The other part, and note once again, the when did you stop beating your wife questions, right? When are you going to go after journalists? It's like, what?
What?
It's like, yeah. And then one win here, bright spot too, on top of everything. This is a breaking news as of yesterday. Trump demands FBI corrupt shattered DEI office retain all records as critics call for a national security focus. Yeah. So
let me read that again. I just want to make sure I understood it. Trump demands FBI's corrupt, shuttered DEI office retain all records as critics call for national security focus. Okay, so they're going to be going after the DEI office for, I assume, wrongful hiring, firing, things of that
and
nature.
This is kind of playing a little ahead of the ball here. So the FBI shutters their DEI office, and then why? Before Trump even comes into office, why did they do that? Well, one of the reasons you do that, especially if you're an intelligence agency, is to destroy all the records of it. So what did they actually do? He's calling, hey, I know what you're doing here with shuttering your office before I even get in. You need to retain all the records. Yeah.
Can he mandate that they do that?
As an appointee, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, because I'm thinking of like all the other times when it's been mandated that records be kept and they're like quickly shuffled off to the shredder.
Well, interesting. Part of the Pam Bondi confirmation hearing was, are they going to keep, will Trump keep the January 6th records?
Will he keep them?
Yeah. That's what the Democrats question was. Once again, are you beating your wife sort of question, but it's one of those, you know, like that records keeping thing is a big part of our understanding of, you know, what actually happened at the agency.
Is there an assertion that he would want to get rid of them because he's implicated in?
Yes,
that's what they're trying to
insurrection
put the narrative.
Yeah, they're trying to create that narrative.
Yeah,
I think he would keep them for the opposite reason.
yeah, depends on how the investigation went.
We had one more interesting secretary appointee here, and we have a Scott Bessent. Is that his last name?
I believe that's how you pronounce it. Yeah,
who has been tapped for the Treasury Secretary, and he's an American investor, hedge fund manager. Notably, might get conservatives in a little bit of a tizzy here. Notably, former partner at Soros Fund Management.
Ooh.
And I saw that his asset management fund got a $2 billion initial investment from Soros. So there's that friendship there that exists there. So kind of interesting. That's a Key Square Group.
Don't love that.
He's a lot of former Democratic ties. He kind of jumped on the Trump bandwagon in 2017 during the inauguration, gave $1 million to the inaugural fund, et cetera. But he's, you know, big supporter of Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, and Obama. Seemed to be really in the Al Gore sphere is what, I kind of gauged there. And also he's gay.
He will be the highest serving LGBT person ever.
Trump is so inclusive.
Take that, Mayor Pete.
Yeah, Mayor Pete was the first, but this is a higher ranking office, so this will be the highest served.
Wow.
As the second person publicly gay. There's probably been others, but
privately gay, perhaps. Probably. Yeah,
it is Washington D.C.
Very interesting. Well, was there anything spicy about his confirmation hearing?
Nothing in particular. Like, he apparently is a supporter of, and he's been pushing hard for Trump to support the Shinzo Abe model, economic model in Japan, which is, he has a three arrow strategy. It's like quantitative easing. So that's there.
Printing money.
Government spending.
Okay.
And, what was the third one? What's the third arrow? I don't remember. Cutting taxes on the rich, I think, was the third one.
Okay. Supply side economics.
Yeah, something like that. Which, and it's supposed to be just kind of like it's Reaganomics, but it's also Keynesianism, but it's also like, it's also Obamanomics, but it's also, it's just kind of like all the nomics.
I'm just like, how is that any different from what we have been doing?
That is exactly the status quo.
Okay. Yeah.
So the pushback came from Bernie
Sanders.
But all
together.
At once. Yes.
All at once.
So like the Secretary of State, the Armed Services, and then like the Judiciary Committee all had their moments in the sun. So Bernie Sanders tried to generate his by going after him on millionaires. And that was in the minimum wage. And those are really the two.
When you have a small number of multi-billionaires who have enormous economic, media, and political power, would you agree with President Biden, who last night stated, and I quote, "An oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights, and freedoms," end of quote. That's what President Biden said last night. I agree with him. Do you?
Senator Sanders, I enjoyed our visit.
Talk a little bit closer into the mic.
I enjoyed our visit, and I hope you got my follow-up materials on the discussions, my previous writings on the tariffs and China. And look, the three billionaires who you listed that all made the money themselves. Mr. Musk came to the country as an immigrant.
I understand that. But what I'm asking you is, when you have a handful of people like Musk, who will soon be part of the Trump administration, and others, when you have three people owning more wealth than the bottom half of American society, when these people have enormous influence over the media, when they spend huge amounts of money in both political parties to elect candidates, what Biden said last night is we're moving toward an oligarchy. I'm asking you that question. Do you think, forget how they made their money, do you think that when so few people have so much wealth and so much economic and political power, that that is an oligarchic form of society?
Well, I would note that President Biden gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to two people who I think would qualify for his oligarchs.
This is not a condemnation of any one individual.
Literally just did that.
I'm just asking, would so few people have so much wealth and power?
It's just the same time. It's just the same talking points over and over again. Every single time you hear him, he's saying the same thing. Bro, you wrote a book about how it's bad making $1 million and you made $1 million off of it. Like,
now it's billionaires are the problem, not millionaires, Kyle.
That's savvy entrepreneurship.
it just, all political systems are oligarchies.
I was gonna say, I feel like we're in one right now.
We just mythologize and pretend like, oh, this one's different than that one, but they're all oligarchies at the end of the day, and we're just transitioning different aristocracies into power. It's Bernie.
No, Kamala was definitely chosen by the people to be.
So, and that actually highlights something important there, is there's a fundamental difference between the kind of power you wield as vice president than you wield by owning the Washington Post. They're both power, but you shouldn't treat power as a fungible sort of thing, acting as though your ability to drone American citizens is the same as your ability to allow them to tweet is not the same. And one is an oligarch and the other is a rich guy. Right. And conflating those two actually, I think, dumbs down most of the most important components of talking about our society. Additionally, that what I think Kyle's insight here is that you need, the hierarchy is natural, it's human, and you need leaders. So every movement, no matter how grassroots, has leaders. Bernie is a leader of the leftists, right? Is he an oligarch? Is that the same thing? Is it just being a leader? Is it just having some amount of power? That's just not of any kind, or is it just what oligarchy actually means, which is a small group of people who control the government?
Which is just the government.
Yeah. It's abuse of the term, in my opinion. It really is.
So we got some breaking here from Bennett. Vivek plans to announce he is running for governor of Ohio.
Yeah, I'm starting to see it a lot more on Twitter. But yeah, that happened when we were recording. So I don't know how, you know, it's only a few things on Twitter, but I guess.
You know, it's interesting because yesterday I saw there was reports that Trump was urging Vivek to go for
Senate
for JD's spot.
Yeah, I think so. They already chose someone though.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, it says here the revelation comes just hours after current Governor Mike DeWine announces Lieutenant Governor John Husted as his pick to replace Vance in the U.S. Senate.
Well, that might be for a future presidential play too, because there's always the meme of governors do better than senators on presidential races and things like that.
Yeah, I mean it's more of a equivalent position, I guess, right?
More equivalence.
Yeah, interesting. But
that is interesting to see. It's going to be kind of a sad because Vivek will probably be less off the national stage for a bit once he gets it.
Less, you mean like just he won't be as prominent on the national stage?
In the Doge position, right, as co-leader of Doge, like he's not going to be doing Doge stuff then if he's governor. He's going to be too busy being governor.
Well,
right?
I guess when is the election?
He'll just be outside of the public sphere probably.
Do you know?
November of 2026.
Right. So I think that this calculus actually played into the Doge mandate being as short as it was, 18 months or something like that?
Yeah.
Then he could still run for governor.
Hmm. Yeah, it's very, very early. This is an early announcement. So, interesting.
Well, he's got to get ahead of that H-1B thing.
Yeah. He
needs some time.
Yeah. Well, we now know why he's been so quiet on Twitter lately.
People aren't down with Indians in their political positions, apparently. We learned that recently.
Jeez. Well, we've got one more topic to get to, but I realize we're going a little long, so maybe we'll move swiftly through this one, shall we?
We can't go swiftly through this one. It's too much.
All right. Well, we'll just run long then. Stick around with us. We're going to talk about the breaking ceasefire.
We can't shorthand this. This is huge. This is
a big deal. All right.
So... I wanted to do a quick update on where Israel-Palestine has been. We haven't talked about it in a long time, partly because we're just, you know, we're a growing YouTube channel and we want to have the algorithm work in our favor.
That's not why. We're not self-censoring. there's other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, there's also a lot other of stuff to talk about. So, update on Israel-Palestine. So, since the onset of the war on October 7th, 2023... we're sitting around like the final numbers of 1,300 Israelis have been killed, 3,418 injured, 383 soldiers have died, including 68 since the ground campaign. So the ground campaign when they came into Gaza, about 68 soldiers have died. In Gaza, we're at 46,707 Palestinians that have been killed, 17,492 being children, and 7,696 injured. With almost all 2.4 million inhabitants displaced. And West Bank, and this is, so keep in mind, Gaza is on the left, West Bank is on the right, the other side, kind of in its own area, kind of Jerusalem to leading towards Jordan. There's 852 deaths since the Gaza situation happened, including 175 children and 1,300 injuries.
Jeez.
There was also the Lebanon conflict, 21 deaths there from that conflict. So actually less than I thought. I kind of lost track of what was going on in Lebanon there.
I imagine a lot of those were the exploding pager casualties.
Yeah, but there's also been bombing campaigns, so it's kind of surprising how the difference in that.
Yeah.
Over 160,000 buildings in Gaza have been destroyed or damaged, with 17 out of 36 hospitals partially functioning. Hamas took 250 hostages, 97 are still in captivity, 112 have been released in exchanges so far. So this is, the exchanges are actually happening as confrontation is happening, so there's been that kind of level of negotiations. this kind of takes it to a different level. But it comes together from a very important time because with the onset of winter and things like that, there's been a series of collapsing problems because of the collapse of infrastructure that are causing more deaths. So the collapse of healthcare in Gaza has led to an estimated 62,413 deaths from starvation, at least 5,000 from chronic disease conditions due to lack of care. Wow. Exposure to harsh winter conditions has resulted in 8 newborn babies and 74 children dying from hypothermia. That's just in January.
With and another, we're only months. Halfway through it.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So so what happened this week was that there was a ceasefire agreement to kind of phase in more hostage exchanges for cease in hostilities. It then would lead to, it's a 3-phase program. It then would lead to humanitarian aid delivery. And then in the third phase, as it kind of escalates in terms of talks, would be a reconstruction efforts. And at each one of those phases, there's also a pullback of Israeli defense forces from areas in Gaza. This still could fall apart, but it goes, the ceasefire goes into effect on Sunday. And there has been like a huge increase in bombings going up to Sunday, yesterday and the day before. And then once it goes into effect, hopefully then they can kind of build on that progress, depending on whether or not it breaks down on the character of this. This is like more like a vision, right? It's more like a commitment to do this, more so than like we're going to release XYZ people. Keep in mind that there are thousands, I mean, thousands of incarcerated Palestinians in Israel as well that they are exchanging in these hostage negotiations. Gotcha. And so there's like a mathematical algorithm to that too, like certain amount of Israelis for a certain amount of Palestinians.
Crazy. Well, I mean, super fortunate for everyone in the region that the hostilities are coming to a close.
Yeah, and an important step in the entire process. Now, what this means for American politics is, well, I mean, we just ran a campaign season throughout this whole fight, right? And so this is one of those questions of, was Trump going to be worse? Because a lot of the left was saying, like, you can't vote for Trump, leftists. After all, Trump is worse on Israel than Kamala because he's a Republican. Yeah.
Worse on Israel? Like
he would give Israel more of what they want.
I see.
He's just going to fall more in line with the Zionists because traditionally Republicans do that or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was the narrative.
Right. And so you have Max Blumenthal here on X, like, calling that out, which is pretty prescient. And he's got screenshots from different leftists kind of making this case that there is a case to be made. So Mehdi Hassan. Yeah. For anyone who doubts Trump will be worse than Biden on Gaza, here's Trump saying Netanyahu is doing a good job. Biden is trying to hold him back and probably should be doing the opposite. I'm glad that Bibi decided to do what he had to do. He did that, but he also said, and this is, you know, crazy, and this is just Trump, right? He's always on both sides of every issue. It's hard to ever nail the guy down. He also said, Bibi, you're losing the information war here. You got to wrap this up. So
yeah, like Trump, it's pretty clear to me that Trump's been signaling that Bibi needs to end this for quite some time. Yeah. Like a lot of the narrative around like Trump's just going to be worse, I haven't really personally felt that. Even just people in my own circles have been kind of like always signaling that to me, but I've never really felt that. Like there's the traditional Zionist influence that exists within Republican spheres that's always going to be there, and Trump's going to give certain winks and nods, but Trump has always kind of seemed to me that in the result of the conflict is like he doesn't really seem to be a huge fan of Bibi, and that he wants there to be peace and there to be some sort of resolution to occur.
The motive is an interesting question. Like what is the motive here? And of course, like the Israeli first crowd, right? And we got a tweet from a senator commenting on the ceasefire. And there is a pushback. There's like, this is not the right time to do this. This is a bad thing for Trump to do, et cetera, which is an interesting moment, right? In a break for that. And that kind of gives you something.
Tom Cotton, why is lame dunk Joe Biden trying to did I say lame dunk?
You did.
Why is lame duck Joe Biden trying to cram down a bad deal on Israel on his way out the door? The only deal should be unconditional surrender by Hamas, which is already nearly destroyed, and return of all hostages. Instead, we hear reports that Biden is demanding that Israel withdraw from key terrain in Gaza, release dozens of hardened terrorists for every one hostage, and get back only some hostages. Here's the deal to offer Hamas and its patron. Iran, you have 5 days to release all the hostages or we unleash hell.
Yeah, because hell has not been unleashed
so
in
this,
Gaza.
This no. is the conservative grift game, right? You blame Biden. He did this right when it came out, but then it came out that Trump is the one who made the deal, happen.
It was Trump's envoy, I believe his name is Steve Witkoff, mm-hmm. who went to Israel and broke
He was golfing with when the second assassination attempt happened.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that's the same guy. That's a wow.
Maybe that's what they were chatting about.
So the interesting game here is Biden is also claiming this as his victory, right? Because this is the framework that he proposed in May. Now, what's happened, at first it was like, that's an interesting theory, and now it's like, it's consensus. I mean, we have Arab officials talking to American press outlets saying, no, we couldn't get Israel to the table. We agreed in May, but now all of a sudden Israel's capitulating to a worse deal than what they had on the table in May. The only change difference is Trump coming to the table saying, I want this done before I'm president, which is,
wild.
That is crazy. Right. That's I mean, and you can understand why a lot of people, I mean, especially the instinct of a lot of Americans be like, no, I trust Trump more than I do the Democrats on this. Right. Because, I mean, if you're a part of the Muslim community or a hardline progressive and Israel-Palestine is a big issue for you, you've been paying attention to the fact that Biden has been saying, oh, please stop. But here's more weapons. Oh, please stop. But here's more, you know that this was reported in May. It was talked about in May this last summer. That Israel was the one who's refusing to commit to a ceasefire. So, you know, I mean, you're obviously going to roll the dice for Trump then. That's why he lost so brutally mm-hmm. in so many areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we played that too when I think it was like our episode after the election of the Muslim community shift towards Trump. And I believe we played it was like the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, mm-hmm. Talking about it on Breaking Points, if I remember correctly, where there he was talking about how like, no, like none of us really even trust the Kamala campaign at all with these issues.
Yeah, and I wonder if a lot of the fears around, you know, Trump being, you know, more in Israel's pocket or whatever is really just like a tighter relationship that also seems to have manifested itself in having more leverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if Biden is maybe not even able to broker a deal, you know, cognitively, or his team is not, you know, in good standing in some way with the leadership in Israel, they're not going to be able to get anything done.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, especially with Trump's, I'm reading reports that Trump is relatively popular in Israel for many reasons, like Abrahamic Accords, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, things like that. And, you know, people kind of freaked out about the moving the embassy, and I can understand that being provocative. But if that gave you leverage to then stop a brutal devastation of Gaza, worth it.
Seems like a win.
I think people who are going to somehow try to turn this into, you know, I think the conservative media that's trying to make this into Joe Biden is doing a bad deal, or what Ben Shapiro is doing right now. We don't have any Ben Shapiro clips. Don't worry, Bennett. He's claiming.
I would have cut him out.
He's claiming.
Bennett going rogue.
This happened because Trump is just so strong that they're afraid of it, and he's trying to whip this into like a. It's about the military posture of Trump, and that he's just so. And the same thing with the guy with the eye patch, Ben Crenshaw.
Dan Crenshaw.
Ben Crenshaw. Yeah,
Ben Crenshaw. That's Ben's alter ego.
Amalgamation. Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Ben Shapiro in an eye patch.
Ben Shapiro capable of doing a push-up. Anyways, small boy. What was I talking about? I forgot. Started talking shit and I forgot what I was talking about. Oh yeah, he made the same case. It's like, it's just because Trump is so crazy and so aggressive and he bombed Soleimani. This is the whole reason why they gave up, is because our military posture is more aggressive than these weak Democrats. That's also complete ridiculous manipulation, right? That has it sensible in a it makes sense to the American ear, but it has nothing to do with what actually happened in this case, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what do you think about the insanity, right, of the threat? Oh, America's going to unleash hell on Gaza.
When 160,000 buildings have been destroyed.
What do you, exactly.
Hell's already there.
Yeah, you're already in hell.
Wait, which layer of hell
are we
talking
about? How do you make it worse? And one other thing with this Tom Cotton tweet is it's literally false. we have Antony Blinken, the guy with the least reason to claim that they've failed to get rid of Hamas, admitting that they've failed to get rid of Hamas for the most predictable frickin' thing ever, terrorist math.
Terrorist math.
Each time Israel completes its military operations and pulls back, Hamas militants regroup and reemerge because there's nothing else to fill the void. Indeed, we assess that Hamas has recruited almost as many new militants as it has lost. That is a recipe for an enduring insurgency and perpetual war. The longer the war goes on, the worse the humanitarian situation gets in Gaza.
Lord Bebo.
Yeah, I don't know who Lord Bebo is.
Lord Bebo. It's a big Twitter account, I believe.
Oh, okay. So what is terrorist math? Well, it's the classic, you know, question. We've been dealing with this for a quarter century. This question of if you kill somebody, that kind of makes the people who knew that person angry at you. And then they become terrorists. So when your son or daughter or your cousin or your brother or your father are bombed, regardless of whether or not they were Hamas, even if they were and you weren't, maybe you disagreed with them on politics or the tactics that you should use in politics or whatever, you get radicalized pretty quick. And that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's the Gordian knot that Israel's in, right? Is they have this population that they've put in this situation for a very long time, created a ton of resentment, and this is a real problem, right? That they have to handle, and there's no good way to handle it except for targeting individuals, which puts Israeli Defense Forces at more risk because that means they have to do operations into Gaza. They can't just bomb buildings. They can't just hold territory with tanks.
What if eventually the Hamas leadership just grows up like the ISIS leadership did?
All it needs is a couple $1 million in CIA funds and they can just grow up.
Now, there's a good idea.
Hey,
anyone think about just throwing them some CIA funds?
Well, so Israel already did that.
Ah, you're right. They're trying to control the height of the flame.
That was Assad funds, though.
That's our sister organization.
Yeah. So that's a real component of this as well, is like everything they're dealing with, every time they say it, I can't help but remember, yeah, but you guys funded these guys. You made sure that they were the only legitimate power for people to turn to in Gaza because you wanted it to be this way. Not because you wanted the death, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that, but because you wanted to make sure the person on the opposite side of the negotiation table was a radical Islamist, not a PLO figure. Not somebody who was a secularist who just wanted freedom for their people to not be under Israeli rule.
Because it's a lot harder to subjugate someone with those intentions than it is an extremist.
Yes, it's a media war campaign.
Yeah.
Right? It was to manipulate the perceptions of Arab people and of Palestinians as all being terrorists. Because you put Hamas at the face of it and then they just assume everyone. And that's that fundamental group composition fallacy. You just assume they're the same ethnic group, therefore they all have the same character, which is just simply false, right?
Yeah.
Hamas to Israel is kind of what Al-Qaeda is to us. Like, it was the same type of origins, same type of problem, same type of, like, it's the same thing happening over and again. Because, like, we funded Al-Qaeda, we trained Al-Qaeda to fight against the Soviets, and we used them for the same type of reasons that Bibi was using Hamas for controlling the height of the flames, and it's the same story.
Just wait, 20 years from now, Hamas is going to be in charge of Egypt, and they're going to be like, oh, no big deal.
They grew up.
Yeah, they grew up.
Put that on your bingo card next year.
Oh, man. So weird to laugh at this. You'll laugh so you don't cry.
That's be for true. Our 2040 bingo card.
Yeah, exactly.
Hamas rules Egypt. That'd be a wild prediction.
Mm-hmm. Now it would. It might not be in 10 years, 15 years.
So beyond the ceasefire, and I do want to note a couple of things, and I know we're going long. Thank you for sticking with us, everybody. The real questions that remain from the ceasefire is, will they go right back to it? And this has happened before in these sorts of ceasefires in Israel, is they get some hostages, they disagree on some details in order to get back to the, you know, basically put more pressure on Hamas, is that Israel breaks the ceasefire and starts taking territory again. Because they can do that. And if the international scene says, bad Israel, don't do that, we want the ceasefire, they'll say, tough luck, and they'll bring it to the Security Council and America will vote it down. And I do think Trump would do that. So, and then that's a good question and worthy of much debate that's kind of going around. One of the questions is, why didn't Biden do this? I mean, he had the cards, right? He had the weapons.
I don't know if you saw, but Tom Cotton says that he did.
Yeah. Well, that was written before we knew, which looks really embarrassing now. When you look at all the claims there, all of them are wrong. Yeah. All of them. And like, this deal is now worse for Israel than the old deal. And that's according to Israel. That's according to Israeli commentators saying we should have taken the May deal.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to show why you don't tweet right away after something happens before you have all the facts.
Yeah.
But you gotta get the engagement farming, though. Yeah. You gotta get those Elon bucks.
Yeah. And I think the Israeli first crowd that are like support Tom Cotton do not care. They'll hear anything he says on it.
Yeah. No, it that's exactly what it is. It doesn't matter. The narrative will switch. Trump is now the savior of everything, despite him doing what they're saying that shouldn't have been done. And you know, they'll flip. They'll do whatever they have to get on whoever's good side that they have to get on, so that they can continue to push their war efforts.
Yeah. So a big part of this that I had to tease out of here, and we haven't talked about Israel for some time, so I wanted to return to it. One of the parts of this that make it so difficult is the combination of assumptions based upon group. And there's this concept that we talk about called methodological individualism. It means your method of assessment is best done at the individual level, especially when it comes to issues of justice. In this case, justice is taking Hamas members who committed the attacks and putting them and prosecuting them in a court of law. Short of that, killing those guys. And short of that, killing people associated with them. And short of that, you know, doing things like bombing in a building because there's one terrorist in it, and you notified the other people by a text message. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. These are like gradations of the closer you get to an individual, the closer you are to justice. And, you know, people's instincts here are seeing innocents suffer is what's losing Israel their war, because they are not operating on that level. And that's like the underlying philosophical framework that people want to operate on. They want to find the people who committed the bad thing to get punished. What they don't want to see is, you know, people who just happen to be saying building as them get punished.
Yeah. Women and children.
Especially.
Yeah. It's TikTok's fault.
Yeah. And then blaming TikTok. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
What? Why would the Chinese do this? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Mm.
And one more. When you look at the what afterwards thing, how does the thing all end? Right. Biden claims that this framework can lead to a two-state solution and like long-term peace. I'm pretty skeptical of that claim. I really don't see it in there. I wonder to what degree American finance is going to be involved in rebuilding Gaza. Does that help? Don't know.
Depends on who you're referring to as being helped.
Yeah, yeah. Like Halliburton's hired to rebuild the infrastructure of Gaza.
It'll be BlackRock.
I was thinking that too.
Halliburton's boomer now. BlackRock is
Kushner.
Yeah.
Well, they don't build stuff. They just finance stuff. I'm just talking actually literally laying concrete.
Remember, Kushner was always talking about how it would be good beachfront property. So you got to rebuild it in that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at the aerial photos right now, I mean, the claims of when it first happened, when people said they turned into a parking lot, that's what's happened. Right? It's worse than a parking lot. It's rubble. They were already living in rubble. Right? So, the humanitarian conditions are going to get worse. The winter's not over. Supplying of aid, it's hard to get through when you've literally turned all the buildings into the streets.
And turned all the streets into holes.
Yes.
And also when you bomb the aid when it's coming in.
But the larger question of like, how does this resolve itself? The Gordian knot question is also tied into the history of it, right? So the question of justice for any individual in the case, if you're Palestinian, it's the injustice of the Nakba that frames everything. You were in a village for thousands of years, you're kicked out, you're now in a refugee camp permanently, right? For the Israelis, it's the existing Israelis now who grew up in Israel didn't commit the Nakba, right? And their cousin who died in an intifada in early 2000 or whatever, they see as an injustice. They see what they're doing. Both sides see themselves as acting in defense of something important and vital. That question of justice has to subvert itself to a larger principle. And that larger principle, in my mind, is peace, right? You have to value the future more than you do the injustices of the past at some juncture. And the question is, are either side willing to do that? And is any of this actually driving towards that?
Yeah, like it seems like there needs to be some sort of new meme that merges that is like some or some great leader that is like a peacemaker of some sort that brings people together. And at this point in time, I don't see that. So like there might be some temporary pausing on the hostilities. There might be some sort of a push for one state solution, two state solution, whatever. I think both of those have their problems because if there's no real like trying to stop the cycle of violence that's been going on there for now, and it's just going to continue to be generational. Like you need to have some sort of new like super meme emerge in between all of that to kind of bind everybody together in some fashion to allow for the peacemaking process to happen. Otherwise, it's just going to be temporary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it kind of reminds me of this time. Gosh, it's probably in the late, well, it's probably in the mid-teens, I want to say, but I remember seeing on the internet people from Iran like holding up signs, you know, that say like, you know, the people of Tehran don't hate you or whatever, don't hate America or whatever. And then people in America would like send things back. Like, we don't hate you either. And like, really, that's, I think, the kind of more of the core of this. Obviously, the, you know, the terrorist math and the injustice and, you know, family members lost, like that plays a factor for sure. But I think broadly speaking, when it comes to conflict in general, like most people don't have any interest in fighting other people halfway around the world. It's the governments that are invested in doing that who benefit from that, and it's the people that lose.
Yeah, you put a mind virus into society and then you get recruitment numbers up.
And the last part of that is that blowback does not care about this peace process, right? There are people who are radicalized now who are never going to be unradicalized. And they see American bombs with USA DOD written on the side of them. And
Lindsey Graham's signature.
Yeah. There. Yeah.
Or Nikki Haley.
Mike Pence. All those guys. And that's holding up their tent, like the used shell munition that they grew up in.
No shit.
Right? That's actually a common use of the shell casings. Jesus. If you grow up with that, or you grow up seeing your children in that, or your cousins, or whatever, you're unlikely to forgive and forget. And it's going to blow back on America specifically. Keep in mind that the dominant argument for the recruitment of Al-Qaeda was American support for Palestine, American Israel. troops in Israel, American troops in Saudi Arabia, and American atrocities in the 1990s against Iraq, including the blockade that resulted in the deaths of 500,000 children from dysentery, mostly preventable disease.
At some point, the American people have to put a stop to it.
Yeah. And return to that blowback point again and again is because we have to learn the lesson of empire, that this is the cost. And the terrorist math, the way that works, the way that all these things work is an untangible, like what's like, it's bound together so tightly that if you separate them, you're not really getting the picture. You have to bring all these keys together and say like, okay, so what is the cost that we're going to pay for this? And I'm not saying that Israel doesn't have a right to exist. I'm not saying any of those things. All I'm saying is that if you don't disrupt that with a higher value, with an appeal to a higher cause, you're going to continue this, and it will pay a cost eventually. And we've already going to pay it. It will happen.
On that note, it's a good place to wrap up.
Yep.
Thanks so much for watching. It's been Human Reaction for David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett. I am Joe Sheehan, and we will see you in the next one. Stick around, members, for SCIF number 32. See you in that.
We're going to be talking about the OpenAI whistleblower.
That's right. Salacious story.
I did some deep dives into that story.
It's wild. If you haven't heard about it yet, you will want to check that out. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
what was Biden's D-Day?
Probably a flight of stairs.